Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the fourth edition of the Mahindra & Mahindra Limited Environmental, Social and Governance ESG conference call. We have with us the senior management team of Mahindra & Mahindra with us today. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sriram Ramachandran, Senior Vice President, Corporate Finance, Investor Relations and Special Projects. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Sriram.
Okay, thank you. Welcome all to the fourth ESG call. And we have our senior management with us. I'll just quickly introduce the people around the table. We have got Mr. Ulla Sargo, who is a Group President, IT Sector, Group CTO and Chairman of Group Sustainability Council. Then we have got Mr. Rajiv Dubey, who is Group President, HR and Corporate Services, and CEO of Aftermarket Sector, and Chairman of Corporate Governance. We have got Mr. V.S. Parthasarathy, who is Group CFO and Group CIO. We also got Mr. S. Durgashankar, who is the President, Group M&A, Corporate Accounts and Group Secretary. Mr. Narayan Shankar, who is a Company Secretary. Mr. Anirban Ghosh, Chief Sustainability Officer. And Mr. Sandhya Sharma, Vice President, Corporate Governance. Now, I hand over, the meeting would be kicked off by Mr. Parthasarathy. I hand over the podium to Parthasarathy.
Thank you, Sriram. Welcome you all to this fourth ESG call. We may be one of the very few companies who started with this practice of ESG call some years back. Let me begin by sharing with you why we do these calls. We have noticed that ESG investing is gaining a lot of traction, and more investors are very interested about how our company is managing its environmental, social and governance factors apart from its financial performance to ensure that they are investing in a company that's sustainable and socially responsible. However, this is a relatively new way of looking at the business. Many corporates are not used to reporting these parameters in a structured fashion, which would be useful to investors. As a result, we often find that ESG reports from third-party consultants which rely on are based on information that is not accurate, leading to erroneous conclusions. We felt that while as a company we have strong focus on creating a socially responsible, sustainable business, and we have been communicating this through our sustainability and CSR report for some years now, we need to do more. In this connection, we published our first integrated report last year. We have started this ESG call to ensure that you can hear directly from our senior leaders such as Ulhas and Rajiv, who are in this call with me today. We would continuously want to improve how we do these calls, and please share your feedback of this call to the investor relation team so that we can improve this further. Let me begin by talking on two issues and then pass to Ulhas and Rajiv for their introductory comments. The issues I'm going to touch are our focus on governance, not merely as a process or a step, but as a necessary condition. But also, we are looking at it largely as a differentiator, which will take us to being the 50 most admired brand globally, and how we are ensuring our core businesses to become more environmental friendly and prepare us for tomorrow. I think you have your presentation with you, and if you turn to slide 3, but if you have not got the presentation, don't worry, because I'm anyway covering verbally what you would otherwise see on the slide. Governance is something that has to start from the very top. As you can see, the statement from our chairman, Mr. Anand Mahindra, we believe it is nice to have money, and it is nicer to have things that money cannot buy, which is reputation. That is why as an organization we are paranoid of our reputation and governance processes. In slide number 4, you see for us, governance is in our DNA as well as is embedded in our brand. When we say governance, we think of UNESCO. UNESCO's definition of governance. It refers to structures and processes that ensures accountability, transparency, responsiveness, rule of law, stability, equity, and inclusiveness, empowerment, and broad-based participation. If you go to slide 5, you'll see that we have seen our governance efforts that have paid off handsomely. And if you look at our graph, you realize that we have consistently delivered return much above market. You'll agree that a return of 19% over 25 years is a testimony for the paths that we have taken. As you can see from the list on the right, we have even always proactively, we have been very proactive when it comes to regulatory requirements. We have 70% independent directors on board, which is higher than the 50% requirement. Audit committee of M&M was constituted in 87, which is 17 years before it was made mandatory. We have been spending 1% of CSR from 95, much before Companies Act 2013 made it mandatory. In Mahindra, we have created an e-cockpit, which is in slide 6, an electronic platform through which various stakeholders can interact within the overall regulatory framework. The portal would provide information that is required for various stakeholders to ensure not just compliance, but also ensure governance. We would use technology to improve our compliances processes. Slide 7. We also put into place a mechanism that would institutionalize governance as a process. All key decision points will be tested for the 3 C's, which form the root of governance. These 3 C's are competency, compliance, and conflict of interest eradication. Competency ensures that the decisions taken is fully compliant and a person who takes decision is fully compliant to take the decision. Compliance, ensuring that the decision maker has attitude of compliance, and eradication of interest, conflict of interest eradication, ensure that the decision maker is not self-conflicted by self-interest in taking any decisions. We work to ensure that various stakeholders are aware of 3 C's and ensure they do not come in the way of compliance. Slide 8, last but not the least, in Mahindra we add 4th P to the 3 P's of people, planet and profit, which is process. We believe that people and planet are the purpose of every business, and profit and governance form the process of doing business. Now let me change track and go to something more about our core automotive and how they are ready for tomorrow. As you know, auto industry is shifting to BS6 emission norms from April 1, 2020. That is a big change for the entire industry, and more so for us as we have been predominantly focused on diesel engines. I am happy to say that we have made significant progress in ensuring that we have cost-effective options to switch over to BS6 compliant vehicles, meeting the current deadline that has been set by the Government of India. We are also becoming fuel neutral. We will have both petrol and diesel options for all our passenger vehicles by 2020. We are developing a complete range of gasoline engines that would go in both personal and commercial vehicles. In fact, we had taken more than 50 analysts to our Mahindra Research Rally in March 18 to showcase our preparedness, and the feedback was very positive. You would have seen their reports. Slide 12. Last year, there has been a lot of talk about EVs gaining prominence. As you can see from slide 13, we are leading the way in adoption of electric vehicles in shared and mass mobility. We are working with taxi aggregators such as Ola, Uber, Zoomcar, Lithium, and also with government through ELSS tender. In slide 14, you can see that we have already invested 600 crores in EV technology and products and have more than 4,000 vehicles on road running more than 68 million e-kilometers. In slide 15, you can see that we have a range of products starting from three-wheelers at one end to bus at the other end with varying range and top speeds. Accordingly, we are working on a series of low voltage and high voltage platforms to electrify the market. I just want to conclude my presentation by saying that ESG factors are integral to whatever we do. With this, I now request Ulas to talk about our approach to sustainability and then hand over the baton to Rajiv.
Thank you very much. Good day to all of you. It's my pleasure to represent the environmental aspect of this ESG call today. We are delighted that the sustainability ethos is gaining traction across businesses in the Mahindra Group. And in today's presentation, we will talk about our sustainability framework, our leadership in sustainability, the awards that our group has received, the governance structure for sustainability, how we are building an enduring business, and how we are rejuvenating the environment. The Mahindra Group has created a sustainability framework to build a common language for sustainability across the group. This framework talks about building an enduring business by rejuvenating the environment and enabling stakeholders to rise. Today, I will talk about the work we are doing on rejuvenating the environment. To begin with, let me just talk about some things that have happened since we last spoke. At the Climate Week in New York this September, Governor Brown of California invited our chairman, Anand Mahindra, to be a co-chair of the Global Climate Action Summit to be held in San Francisco this September. Other co-chairs for the summit will be Patricia Espinoza, the Executive Secretary of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, and Michael Bloomberg, the UN Secretary General's Special Envoy for Cities and Climate Change. The follow-up to this was Anand Mahindra issuing a call for action to all industries and businesses to adopt science-based targets at the World Economic Forum in Davos. The next slide talks about global recognition that the Mahindra Group has received for the role they have played on sustainability. Mahindra Holidays became the first hospitality company in the world to sign the EP100 Global Collaborative Initiative to pledge doubling their energy productivity. Mahindra Life Spaces is a founder member of the Sustainable Housing Leadership Consortium and is working towards mainstreaming green homes in India. Tech Mahindra has received the top score in CDP, Carbon Disclosure Project, and in Dow Jones Disclosures. M&M and Mahindra Finance have also done well. And Mahindra and Mahindra Limited announced an internal carbon price of $10. This actually is the value of all investments we do to reduce our carbon footprint. Our companies have also achieved a lot of recognition for the work they have done. I already talked about Tech Mahindra and their ranking in CDP. Mahindra Holidays won the prestigious Golden Peacock Environment Management Award. Our plant, automotive division plant in Zahirabad, bagged the second prize at the National Energy Conservation Award by the Ministry of Power, Government of India. Mahindra and Mahindra Limited Igatpuri plant won the Global Sustainability Award, Platinum Rating, and Best Sustainability Initiative Pavilion Award at the World Renewable Energy Congress organized by the Energy and Environment Foundation and supported by the Ministry of Non-Conventional Energy. six Mahindra and Mahindra plants have won the CII National Energy Conservation Award and CII National Water Management Award. Mahindra Life Spaces won the prestigious Golden Peacock. I think I already talked about that. Mahindra Sustain bagged the Gold Award in category Solar O&M Contractor of the Year. And Mahindra Racing Formula E team was awarded the second highest level of FIA Institute Sustainability Accreditation. These successes can be credited to the governance structure for sustainability. Our board committee for CSR sets direction for promoting both sustainability and CSR agenda. The Group Sustainability Council, which comprises CEOs and CXOs and several members of our group executive board, is supported by the sector sustainability champions across our different sectors and locations. We see sustainability as a business opportunity for the group, and this sentiment is reflected in the successes we have achieved in the development of our green product portfolio. Our green revenue portfolio includes electric vehicles and also solar, micro-irrigation, real estate, and end of life for vehicles in an environment-friendly way. Now we would like to move to the various material issues that we have identified in the realm of sustainability. Mahindra & Mahindra was the first company in the world to sign Energy Productivity 100. Mahindra Holidays was the second company from our group to sign this. And as of date, our total share of renewable energy is at 6%. We are committed to convert all existing lighting to LED lights under the Ujala program by the Government of India. We are also a signatory to the World Bank's Coalition on Carbon Price. And in 2016, as I mentioned earlier, we became the first company in India to declare a carbon price. Our group is water positive, and this is partly due to our watershed programs, one of which is the Damo project in Madhya Pradesh, an integrated watershed management program. Through the sale of our micro-irrigation products of Mahindra EPC, we are also maintaining our water positive status. As far as waste is concerned, we are converting waste generated. Mahindra Ilatpuri engine plant became the first location in India and second globally to become zero waste to landfill. And I'm very proud to report that today four other plants, Haridwar, Swaraj, and Auto Division in Zahirabad and Farm Division in Zahirabad, were also certified as zero waste to landfill. So this is a big day for us today. We are converting waste generated at Mahindra World City in Chennai into fuel, and that's a wonderful example of waste to energy. We are reaping dividends on seeing waste as a resource, and some of the innovations in this field include using waste from steel stampings to make transformer cores, which reduces the cost of transformers, using waste sand from our foundries and slag from steel mills to overcome the shortage of river sand to make bricks, food waste being used as manure and also to generate biogas, hay being converted into briquettes, and paint sludge being used as fuel in cement plants. This is how we are contributing in part to the circular economy model. On the biodiversity front, in 2014, we became a signatory to the India Business Biodiversity Initiative. And a follow-up to this was the Igatpuri engine plant becoming a sort of story for biodiversity. So the plant, through its addition to green cover around it, has reduced the dust levels. It has reduced the temperature of the plant by 2 degrees Celsius as compared to nearby locations. And in fact, because of the reduction in dust, it has also improved the quality of the products it manufactures. So these are all examples of some of the work we are doing in sustainability. Thank you very much for your time, and I'm going to hand it over to Rajiv Dubey.
Okay, so thank you very much, Ulas. My presentation has three broad parts. The first one is on human capital with special reference to diversity and inclusion and some parts of our talent management process, a piece on internal governance policies, and then finally on CSR, which we call Rise for Good. So if you look at slide 42, women representation hasn't been really our strength. We have doubled the headcount of women officers between 2010 and 2018. But I think one must be frank to say that at 6.2% and just 651 women, we have a long way to go. But the good news is that women representation has increased at all levels. And if you turn to the next slide, which is recruitment of women, this is one area where we are paying a huge amount of importance. Now, as a company, we don't stipulate numbers, but what we do stipulate is that when we are recruiting, A, in the recruitment pool itself, we must have sufficient number of women candidates, and everything else being the same, we would prefer to have women. So some decent numbers, if you look at last year, if you see graduate apprentice trainees, 30% were women. Graduate engineer trainees, 26% were women. Campus hire at Tech Mahindra, 55% were women. And a very good number for us, sales trainees in the auto sector this year, 50% were women. And these women actually will be out working in our area offices. So this is something to feel happy about, but clearly we have a long way to go. Having said that, we also have a special referral program to hire women, and that is gaining ground. If we come to the next slide, for women who are working with us, we have a number of gender and maternity policies. I'm not going to go through the whole list, but you can see it goes from things like safety and travel to equal opportunity, work-life policy, part-time employment, creche and maternity leave, and sabbatical policy. We have put a lot of effort in trying to create our women leaders of tomorrow. And in that context, slide 46 talks about the Women Leaders Program. Now, this is a program that has seen two batches of women. We deliver it jointly between the Mahindra Leadership University and the SP Gen Institute of Management. If you turn to slide 47, you will see the framework of the Women Leaders Program. This design has been taken from the Future Leaders Program, which is the topmost leaders program that we have in the Mahindra Leadership University, which I'll talk about a little later too. But 31 women from M&M have already taken part in this journey over the last 2 years. It has received excellent feedback. It has made a huge difference to the women who have participated and, of course, to the men who have been involved in this. And we see this initiative going from strength to strength. And hopefully, as a result of this, the participation of women in senior management should see a decent rise in the years to come. If you turn to the next slide, I'm happy to share with you that actually, despite not having had huge numbers, the United Nations Global Compact Network in India has noticed the work that we're doing, and we actually got the first runners-up prize for our gender diversity practices. If I move now to slide 49, I just want to share, I refer to the Mahindra Future Leaders program. We run it as a collaborative offering from the Mahindra Leadership University, the Yale School of Management, and IMD Lausanne. And the first batch has just completed an 18-month program. We have got excellent reviews, and we are going to launch the next round sometime next year. This has participants largely from M&M and also from our other group companies. If I just turn to slide 50, this is a Mahindra Leadership University. We believe that this is a fairly unique platform that we have created where business and HR leaders come together and provide cutting-edge programs both in domains and in the area of leadership in general and innovation. So this is a network, a platform really that we have created where there are certain programs that are delivered at the group level, and then there are programs that are delivered by businesses and by domain specialties and are made open through the platform to participants from across the group. So it could very well be a fairly unique model anywhere in the world. And we hope that this Mahindra Leadership University will become a powerful engine for creating Mahindra leaders of tomorrow. And all these efforts put together have resulted in several Mahindra companies, of course, Mahindra and Mahindra Limited leading the way, Mahindra Finance and Mahindra Lifespaces finding place in the top companies of the Great Places to Work initiative. Turn to page 52. Now, all our efforts at creating talent, skills, competencies, and leadership are not limited just to officers. So the Transformational Work Culture Council was created in, this is slide 54, sorry, slide 54. This was created in 2005. So we've been working at it for 13 years. And this council really seeks to engage with our work people, to provide them lots of inputs to improve their skills and competencies, and to give them enough opportunities to participate in the innovation that is taking place on the shop floor and at the company level. Now, the council consists of people who run the operations and people from the HR fraternity. And we work with the unions and we work with our workers across, and hopefully, except for salary levels, which of course have to be determined by market forces, we are creating an ecosystem which will make our workers innovative and productive and therefore help in keeping Mahindra as a highly productive and innovative company, not only as far as officers go, but also with huge contribution from our blue-collar workforce. I come now to slide 56, which gives a list of governance policies for our employees. And again, I won't go through all. You can see the various sections. There's bribery and corruption, for which we have zero tolerance. We have a fairly strong whistleblower policy and ecosystem, which is reviewed regularly, not only by the corporate governance cell, but by the committees of the board. We also have an independent hotline manned by KPMG. I think this had been pointed out last time, but we are happy to tell you that we do have this independent hotline. And clearly, there's an annual compliance module. There's computer-based training modules. And there is an ethics and governance portal for code of conduct violations, declaration of gifts, etc. I come now to slide 58, which has highlighted the three pillars of our CSR, or community interaction. The large part of our CSR monies and volunteering goes in education and skilling, and I just have a few slides which shows you some of the leading portions of the skilling. I'll just go back to that. So there is education, skilling, and employability. That's one pillar. There is public health. That's the second pillar. And there's environment with special reference to water conservation, and green cover. Right? So these make up the three main pillars of our community initiatives. I move now to slide 59, where we talk about our Nanhi Kali scheme, which last year we had 135,000 Nanhi Kalis. Many of them are supported by Mahindra and Mahindra and Mahindra and Mahindra employees and group companies, but equally we have non-Mahindra companies who are coming on board and who have always been on board in this platform. The numbers are there. You see 49,000 girls, for example, are receiving tablet-based learning. We have N-Star centers for working with girls post-school, and cumulatively, since the start of the Nanhi Kali initiative, over 300,000 girls have been supported through this scheme. I come now to slide 60, the Mahindra World College. This is another institution that we support through our CSR funds, where again scholarships are provided to needy children from across the globe. The Mahindra Pride Schools is an important part of our contribution to creating skill, employability, and employment. The 9 Mahindra Pride Schools, from Srinagar to Chennai to Hyderabad to Patna to Chandigarh to Pune, last year trained more than 6,000 youth with 100% employment placement. In addition to the regular Mahindra Pride schools, we have started what are known as Mahindra Pride classrooms, where we are trying to scale up. And last year, when we had 6,200 youth trained in our Mahindra Pride schools, we were able to scale it up to almost 42,000 trained through the Mahindra Pride classrooms in polytechnics, ITIs, and colleges. Now, the employment placement obviously is at a lower percentage. So it is about between 40 and 50% of those who come out from this 40,000 would have found employment. I am not shown a separate slide, but I do want to mention that the if you look at the Mahindra Group as a whole, in addition to the 26,000 youth who would have got employment through the Mahindra Pride schools and through the Mahindra Pride classrooms, Tech Mahindra, through its smart academies, would be providing training to about 40,000 and giving employment to anywhere from 65 to 70% of these. So the total contribution that we are making in terms of employment generation would be upwards of 40,000 per year. And I think that's a reasonably decent contribution to this big problem of employment, employability, and skill creation in the country. I move now to slide 62, which is the Lifeline Express. So that's one major part of what we do in the public health pillar. The number of beneficiaries through two projects, which we did in Balarpur and Ratlam, was about 15,500, and cumulatively, since the time we started sponsoring the Lifeline Express, which is actually a hospital on wheels, cumulatively it's 99,000 individuals that we have treated. This is again an annual affair. This is a huge public-private partnership that takes place, where it's not only we who are involved along with our volunteers. We work very closely with the state governments, agencies, with the railways, and with NGOs and civil institutions in the remote parts of the country where this hospital on wheel goes. I come now to the third pillar, and I stress, I said it's water conservation and green cover. So this slide really is about green cover. We had made a commitment in 2005 that we would plant 1 million trees every year. And if you see from 2000, when the plantations took sort of scale, we have planted almost 15 million trees. And the survival rate is 75%. Don't want to go into details, but one very major social forestry project that needs to be mentioned is the work that we have done in the Araku Valley, where cumulatively more than 6 million trees have been planted, and it provides social forestry and livelihood to a large number of tribal families. So finally, this is slide number 64. It's a list of awards that we have got. We got one just 2 days ago where Mr. Anand Mahindra received in the annual Business Standard Award the award for being the socially most aware corporate in 2017. So that's the latest. Then there you can see there are plenty of other awards that we have got for the various projects that we have done in public health, safety, watershed management, and green cover. So this brings me, I think, to the end of my short presentation. Happy to take any questions that you might have.
We can move to Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Participants who wish to ask questions may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Kumar Rakesh from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity. And congratulations to the team for fourth call. I think it's one of the only companies in Asia which conducts a call for us analysts for ESG. My question was for Partha and also Rajiv, if he can chip in, is while we are talking about preparing ourselves for better environment, that would essentially mean investing in new technologies. I am referring to BS6 as well as EV, and also in some of the endeavors in non-renewable energy which we are working on. Would also include building human resource who are capable of helping you out to build those technologies and products. So how are we placed in that, building that human resource capable enough to drive Mahindra in these new areas? My question is coming from the context is that we position at Mahindra ESG as one of the differentiators in building business as well. Now, while you are lead in ESG, it will only help you if you have the human resource and all the capabilities in place when actually these things become materially important. So how do you plan to address that part of the block?
Okay, so this is Rajiv here. I think it's a very good question that you have asked. I mentioned the Mahindra Leadership University. There, among the various domain academies, we have something called the Technical Academy, and we have the Manufacturing and Quality Academy, and we have also the Service Excellence Academy. Now, these address various aspects of technical excellence. But what I'm picking up from you, and which we might wish to look at seriously, is should we have something which focuses on environment and sustainability as an academy by itself? We haven't yet paid enough attention to that, but as a result of the question that you have asked, I think we will do some thinking, and if we feel that it is something that merits creating a specialized academy, we might well create one. And I'll take help from my friends sitting here, Ulhas and Anirba. So thank you very much for this question.
Did we answer all parts of your question, or is there any other part that you raised earlier about engines and EV which you have not answered? Can you then point out that we'll answer that portion?
Yeah, Partha. The other part was how we are positioned currently. And Rajiv rightly mentioned that how they plan to move forward, but how we are currently positioned in terms of our capability in addressing these new technologies?
Yeah, you know,
in terms of human. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mentioned that we have the Technical Academy, which is really run by MRV. So these are the R&D and product development people who are running this. And a huge amount of work that they're doing in EV and generally making engines more energy efficient and alternative energy using. Then we have the Manufacturing and Quality Academy, which is also training a lot of people in these areas. So that's the general answer to your specific question. If you have something more specific, happy to take it on.
Let me kind of cut a couple of things to Rajiv, and then maybe you can come back and say whether it answers. So just to give a perspective, first is when we looked at, say, technology even. So
the leadership, senior leadership team, which along with it, one of the cheerleaders would be Rajiv himself. He said, why should technology only be here? So when we should we put a MRVR, Mahindra Research Valley, which houses, co-houses 2,000 engineers together to learn from not just in technology, but also to learn from one another, like tractor learning from auto and vice versa, and then extend it to something in US, which is what we have created as MNITC, something in Europe, and something in Japan. So that we have a collaborative, circle of excellence, as we call it, in terms of bringing technology and understanding. So this is one facet of how human resource can learn and start to be ready for future as they see it coming. So you have a post in US which is sensing what will come to India, what will come to US, and therefore how we can act on it. The second part is more like the 20 industries uses a lot of ability to look at it in very many different ways. For example, let's look at solar industry that we are participating. We are a very big developer as well as EPC unit in solar. So we have about what, half a gigawatt or more in terms of installed our developed capacity that we have done. So that gives us huge amount of learning in the ESG space, which we can then, bring to good leverage in this. Similarly, electric vehicles. So just thought I will add this portion dimension.
I'll just chip in partly if I might. So I mentioned the Future Leaders Program. Now, in this Future Leaders Program, an integral part of the program was visiting cutting-edge high-tech companies across the globe to see what kind of work they are doing and seeing how we can try and bring those technologies back home. So like this, we have several platforms where we are benchmarking with each other, as Partha mentioned, across the globe, and with other cutting-edge companies across the globe in various areas, whether it be in electric vehicles or whether it be in precision farming or whether it be in areas connected with IT or even, say, HR. So we are all the time looking to benchmark. And the Mahindra Leadership University is really the overall platform which we use to synergize and keep trying to be on at the cutting edge. Yeah, and of course, we recruit where required people from across the globe. So, for example, for EVs, we have just hired an expat. We are doing huge work in Pininfarina, for example, which is a cutting-edge design company. So there is a lot of cross-sector and cross-global benchmarking that is happening in the area of technology.
Yeah. Great. That perfectly answers the question. Thanks for that insight, Rajiv and Partha.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Ajit Dange from SBI Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Navneet Munoz from SBI Funds Management. Really appreciate not only your commitment towards sustainability, but also the efforts you make on communication and engaging with the investors. Really, really appreciate that. Just two questions. First is, out of the total group revenues of 12, 13 odd billion dollars, two slides showed that you have grow green revenues of around $400 million. Do you think that can grow much faster than the rest of the group over the next few years? Some perspective on that. And second, a feedback that because of the group's involvement in defense-related business, it may be screened negatively those who work on exclusion because of the communication on that side. So I think we need to communicate better on that side, because you are doing a heroic job on the overall sustainability side as a group. And I think if we communicate better on that side, it will really help.
So the first question was whether we see the green businesses going faster than the rest of the group. And to the extent that these are new opportunities, new business models, new technologies coming in, it has the potential to do that. How it actually plays out, I think we'll have to see. But certainly, we are open to it, And as you've seen, we've gotten into lots of new businesses, whether it is electric vehicles, solar, EPC, waste recycling, whatever those different things are. So we are certainly open to it, and we are certainly looking for those opportunities. And I think, you know, we just have to see how it plays out. As far as the second part, Partha, you want to address it?
Yeah. Just to add a couple of more points to what you said. As the world is kind of moving towards more green, more, I think everything we'll do will address concerns. For example, a Euro 6 automobile will emit much far lesser environmental unfriendly gases than what current one does. And as we move, we can say that we are moving towards more greener. And as EV comes, and then a solar-based EV comes, then we are moving into much more cleaner and greener things. So this is a transition which is happening across industry. Even conventional business will be more greener, and I think it is moving. But Ullas has perfectly answered, and one of the big problems is that every business wants to outgrow the other one. So we have 20 of them, you know, competing to be environmentally correct, but at the same time grow very fast. So we will see how this pans out. Coming to the defense part, and I think that's what Ullas was kind of trying. Currently, to be very honest, defense is a very small business, and I think we should not overstate the case of our defense business. The second part of it is that we are in areas currently like armored vehicles, supply of subsystem to naval equipment, and radars, and simulation-based training. That's what we're currently doing. On the other hand, I can be very clear in stating that we are in Mahindra Group is not involved in the development, production, services, and distribution of anti-personnel mines, and our cluster munitions as defined by the Convention on Cluster Munition, Mine Ban Treaty, or components thereof, are in the production of nuclear weapons. We will always stay away from such controversial areas. We are extremely protective about the reputation that we have built for our corporate governance, and we will not let that get spoiled for anything. We follow the same level of corporate governance policies that we follow in other group businesses in defense business as well. We would not chase businesses that makes us in any way compromise our governance standards. And I think this is part of the issue other than ammunition. Having said that, we house all our defense business in a subsidiary company, and we do not do direct business of defense in M&M. And as the business grows, we will explore options which makes you all very comfortable. We are very cognizant of the concern that business use. But let me assure you that we are for the defense and we are not in for the offense. So, and part of it, you are there when this question came up when Anand was addressing all of you. And you recall Anand had given a similar answer. Does that answer both your questions?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just saying that I've seen some of the reports where just because maybe they go to the whatever publicly available information and because of the defense, it just impacts the rankings. I think a communication will help. I think most of the domestic investors fully understand it. It's more from the rating agencies who rate based on the sustainability ranking.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We will take that very seriously and use this communication. You would recall that one of the other communication you or one of your colleagues gave actually helped the set rate with one of the publications were using information, maybe our lack of communication, and therefore were putting us as ESG unfriendly. But after we pointed out to him, they were able to come in. So clearly communication will really help, and I will take that up that we need to enhance our communication to all the stakeholders, relevant stakeholders. Thank you.
This is Ajit. Another question is that being in automobile industry, your supply chain is very pretty long and quite large. So how then, and it seems that even if you would be tracking your sustainability parameters very closely, often it becomes very challenging to ensure that entire supply chain is also moving towards sustainable practices. So how do you ensure that, basically? Yeah. Which are the initiatives that you take to ensure that supply chain is also sustainable?
Okay. I'm going to bring in my chief sustainability officer to kind of talk about what are we doing about this, and it's a very good question. So let me get Anirban Ghosh to answer that question.
Thank you for the question. It's one that bothers a lot of people, so I'm not surprised you're asking the question. The good news is that we have a very robust program with our suppliers in the area of ESG. And, of course, I'm talking now of suppliers who are smaller than us, because we also have some suppliers who are world leaders in the space of ESG, and I'm not referring to them. So suppliers who need our help, we have a very robust engagement in a training program with them. And you'll be happy to know that the energy efficiency program, which we ourselves have signed on to, about 300 suppliers have agreed to take on the LED program and implement it in their institutions as well. And this is over and above the other energy efficiency programs which they've had a chance to visit our factories and see, and they've gone back and started investing in these areas themselves in their own factories. In fact, we enabled 11 of our suppliers to come out with a sustainability report. I was told that this was the first of its kind in the industry. And these 11 suppliers took the help of KPMG, came up with their sustainability reports and joined the sustainability journey, sustainability disclosure journey. In fact, one of them even represented the Indian supply chain, the automobile supply chain at the GRI conference in Amsterdam. This is just a small glimpse of the kind of work that we do. There is a platform created called MSETU, through which a lot of interaction happens with suppliers. Our goal is to ensure that whatever best practices we adopt in our factories, they trickle down to our suppliers' factories as well. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Quinn Liu from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I have one question specifically related to corporate governance. As you mentioned that on your board currently there's 70% of the directors are independent. But what I see is that four of these semi-independent directors have over 15 years of tenure on the board. So it seems to me that they have been directors for too long to be classified as independent. So my question is, do you have any future plans of electing new directors, and what is the long-term view on the board composition? Thank you.
Sorry, can I just clarify that I heard this question? Are you asking whether there is going to be some people who will step off because they've been for many terms and they are going to be replaced? Is that the question?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think there is the Governance, Nomination and Remuneration Committee of the board has a fairly clear plan of succession. And clearly one of the criteria will be the tenure which independent directors have served on the board. And I think in the past few years, several of our very senior independent directors have stepped down and they have been replaced by younger people. And that process will, I think, keep continuing so that there is no one who is going to be on for any longer tenure than is statutorily allowed. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. Is there, so when you say tenure is one of the criteria, is there a number of years that is the criteria?
Yes, the number of years served is a very important criteria because there are statutory limits now on the number of terms that an independent director can serve.
Yeah, so it's very clearly that there are rules, and this started from 2014, as he informs me. And in a country like India, we have been well served by having people whose independence may have been in a sense beyond question, in the sense Mr. Vogel, who kind of set up the banking sector, was on our board for a long time. And we wanted him to have that kind of diverse experience, of the latest one who stepped down, Mr. Deepak Parekh.
Dr. Ganguly,
who was from Unilever. So they were from very different fields, whose experience was of great import to a federation like us. So therefore, very clearly, I mean, we miss them, but we also accept the fact that over a period of time, this change as reflected in the rule is brought through. So, and which is what we have done. And you see that recently, just from a data point of view, Mr. Vikram Singh Mehta has joined our board, and Ms. Vishakha Desai has joined. So this is a process, and we will follow ahead of the
governor.
Mr. Manoharan joined.
We have stepped off.
Three of them have recently joined. And like Rajiv mentioned, it's a process, and we will be fully in compliance with anything, including the newly accepted SEBI regulations of Kotak committee report. Is it okay?
Yes, understood. Thank you.
Thank you. Participants who wish to ask questions at this time can press star and one on their touchtone telephone.
Yeah. So I think in a broader sense, it's 6 o'clock. So I think we also come to an end. Unless anybody has a pressing question, I think. Is that right?
And they can write to us. Yeah.
Yeah, and anyway, what's Sriram?
So, thanks a lot for participating in this call. And if there are any questions which you want to raise, you can write to us. And we would, if it means we have to give you further information, we'll put that in the public domain. And then we will send that to you. And thanks a lot again for your participating in this call. And please do write your feedback, so that we can improve it further as we go along. Thanks a lot, and I thank all the senior management here for your time and being here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you everyone. Thank you
very much. On behalf of Mahindra and Mahindra Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.